the bump and run, the Bristol move.
That's aggressive, but it's that's good. Good heart racing.
Oh!
He puts him out of the groove there.
Oh, man!
Will he get the bumper? Yes, he does. Here comes Logano. Logano on the inside. A drag race. They're sideways. And it's going to be Logano getting the win.
The back end of the 18 kick out.
Yeah, he got into it right there.
Moved him out of the way.
It's almost too early to be racing that hard for the lead, wasn't it?
Never too early to be racing for the lead.
At Bristol.
Man, this is one of the biggest wins of my career.
It's the bump and run,
baby!
Welcome to the Bump and Run podcast. I'm your host, Michael D.Y., joined by my two best friends, Matt the Statman Riley and Eric Daytona Ron. Hope you guys had a great weekend. Hope you guys had yourselves a Ryan Blaney type of weekend. He was the big winner down in Talladega, got himself locked into the round of eight. Right? Yeah, we're in the round of 12 right now. We got himself locked into the round of eight and kind of proved us all wrong what we were talking about last week. I think we'll jump into that. But first, make sure you like, share, subscribe, do all that stuff. Podcast available every Tuesday night, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and more. And every Tuesday night, also now on YouTube, right around 11 o'clock, that goes live. So make sure you're tuning in. And dropping out, I forget who said that famous quote from the 60s, but fellas, how's your weekend? How'd you enjoy your Talladega weekend? Was it busy?
If we gave the listeners 1,000 different guesses, nobody would be able to get, not a single person on planet Earth would be able to correctly guess what we were just doing right before we came on air.
Absolutely.
And we're not going to even get into it, but that was different. That was a,
yeah,
there it is. Totally behind the curtain right now. We're sorry to open up the show with a little inside.
A little elevator music going.
Yeah. A little elevator. Yeah. Stinky elevator music.
Anyways, I don't even want to get into it. You're giving away too much.
I am.
Leave the mystery. So, fellas, how's your weekend?
It's fantastic.
Yeah, Matt. How did your football teams fare this weekend? I know last weekend was a rough one for you. Ended up in the woods.
Notre Dame won a nail biter. So the reverse outcome of last week. So that was good. And then the Jets went toe to toe with the defending Super Bowl champion, the Kansas City Taylor Swifts. So
nice.
Lost the game, but I was encouraged from what I saw. So it's a step in the right direction. But yeah, not as bad as last week. And got some yard work done. We're liming. We're fertilizing. We're hoping for a nice looking yard come springtime. So this is the time to do it. So
I have to fertilize.
Nice Saturday. Go down to Bed Bath and Beyond.
Yeah. If we have time.
How about you, Eric? How's your weekend? How's Duval County, Florida?
Dude, we're doing good. Came back with another win. So good all around sports weekend for the Bump and Run boys here. Texas had a win too. So all good there. Races was good. Watched the truck race in Talladega. The weather, beautiful around here, boys. It's kind of weird that it went back up to like 80. So had to take advantage of that. Haven't been out in the garage in a while. So went out to the garage and watched the old Talladega race out there for probably the last, the weather, you never know. It's weird weather out here, but always try to enjoy the end of summer. I don't, you make it last as long as you can. So while the weather's good, get out there, had the grill out, watching a race in the garage. So it was a good weekend.
I'm on a different page than you, Eric. The leaves are changing, which like literally happened overnight. The leaves are changing, and archery season here in Pennsylvania just started this past Saturday. And I never get out like the first half of the season because it's just so warm still. Yeah. And I've been out in the beginning of the season before, and you walk out of the woods, you're covered in ticks, you're covered in spiders. There's mosquitoes flying around you in the stand. It's just I want, especially now that the leaves are changing, give me like 40s and 50s. I know people are probably calling me crazy, but give me 40s and 50s.
Don't get me wrong, Matt. I want that, but it's not what we're getting. So it's like,
you got to embrace what we have.
I'm going to roll with the tide, And today, I was putting up the old tree stand in the woods today, getting eaten alive by the mosquitoes out there today. So, yeah, hunting season's around the corner. Can't wait for that. But it's NASCAR playoff season right now.
Yes.
That's true. I'm in the camp of enjoying summer as long as it lasts, and I love the warmth. So I'm not ready for the cold. The cold makes me sad. I don't like being cold. I like being hot and sticky. I know that's weird, but I don't know. In my mind, it's always easier to cool off than it is to like warm up. You know what I mean? Where so yeah, I'm loving the 80s. In October here in PA. I'll take that all year long if I could. But
how was your weekend, brother?
Oh, it was great. Me and my girlfriend went to my friend Shifty's wedding. That was a fantastic time. Weather couldn't have been nicer. Had a blast partying with his family and friends and whatnot. It was a really good time. Food was good. Music was good. Company was good. And then Sunday, I'll tell you about my Sunday during the race grades because it definitely affected it a little bit. But first, let's jump into the NASCAR news. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about. First on the docket, the All-Star Race will return to North Wilkesboro. They will also repave the track before the race. What do you think about the return to North Wilkesboro and repaving that old surface that seemed to have been the storyline all last year with tire wear and whatnot?
I mean, I'm going to say this. They made it happen. They put a lot of time, effort, and money to get there to begin with.
Yeah.
So I just think the writing was on the wall there. I think when NASCAR does that, you see it with the Clash of the Coliseum. It's never really a one and done when they do something drastic like that. You know, they kind of have to make it worth their while to even get it back up and running to run that race. So that's what I was thinking. I thought they would always bring it back there. But as far as the repave, it needed it. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The drivers didn't want it. But I think even after the race, I think everybody kind of realized that that was the route they were going to have to go in order to keep the race there. And it just wouldn't have been plausible if they did not do that.
Yeah, it's. I'm glad they got one race in on that old surface just to say that they did it all, like, you know, almost 30 years later. But with all the patches, you saw chunks of it falling apart during the race. Like, it was just getting bad. I couldn't imagine doing another whole All-Star weekend. And the trucks race there for their normal schedule too. So I mean, you don't want that. Like, I know tire wear, we love tire wear, but at the same time, like, that's like a bit of an extreme
undone on you though.
Exactly. I'm hoping that the repave races well. But we all know how repaves happen, and man, this car in short tracks in the first place. We'll see if they make some adjustments in the off season. But I'm excited. I'm excited for them to go back. I hope it turns out well. You guys know I was a hater of the whole thing before they even announced it was going to happen. And
it could be slick and hard to drive. You know what I mean? New, like with this car or anything, like. If you have a new racetrack with not a lot of grip, short, you know, it could be a chaotic race, but in an All-Star race, in the Clash, we all saw what Ty Dillon did. Sometimes chaotic All-Star Clash when there's really nothing on the line, no, you know, it's exhibition or whatever. Sometimes they turn out to be entertaining. Maybe not the racing be great, but sometimes chaos in those type of races could be a good thing.
I completely agree. 100%. I'm hoping just for a good little bit of chaos, you know? Let's see. Speaking of returns, NASCAR will be returning to the Indy Oval in 2024. A lot of fans have been clamoring for that, to see this new car on the Oval. What do you guys think? Either way, are you upset they're leaving the road course? Are you happy they're leaving the road course? Upset they're going to the Oval? Happy they're going to the Oval? Any real opinions?
I'm not upset that they're leaving. Hold on. Let me complete that thought first. Like, no, I'm not upset that they're leaving the road course. But two, I saw something somebody posted on Twitter yesterday or today, like RIP to the infield road courses. Like no Daytona, no Indy, no Charlotte anymore. Like, that's it. So we're back to purpose-built road courses, the super speedway, short tracks, and intermediates. You know, the way our good Lord intended. I think the whole industry, you know, is really curious to see how this car is gonna is gonna perform on the Indy actual Indy course itself, the Indy track itself. I think all indications are leaning towards they're gonna put on a hell of a show. At least fingers crossed with that. Not to mention, like, for tradition's sake, you know, we're back on the traditional Indianapolis Motor Speedway track that is the most famous speedway in the world. So yeah. We're almost doing a disservice to be running on the road course there. So yeah, I'm really excited to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, the true Brickyard 400 returns. So
yeah, I have I think NASCAR's listening to us, boys. We on mm-hmm. here were bitching for a while, saying that, you know, NASCAR, they're always, you know, takes one, you know, two steps ahead to take 14 back, and the changes they make, it doesn't apply with what's actually happening in today. And I think they had to make up their mind. They had so many road courses on the schedule, and this car obviously doesn't perform all that well on these road courses. And where else doesn't it perform well? On the short tracks.
Yeah.
But what is true to our sport, short tracks are. So they're going to keep the short tracks around no matter what. Even though the car doesn't perform well there, they sacrifice those road courses for the sake of what this next gen car could do. Hey, it doesn't perform well, road courses, short tracks. Which one are you going to keep? They're going to keep the one that's been around the longest and that people love and want more of. So I think this is a step in the right direction as far as NASCAR maybe listening and learning and doing what this car does well. So, you know, taking them out of that, you know, the road courses and put them back on the oval where this car has done incredible. I think they're actually doing this. It was actually a breath of fresh air to see them actually doing something. The common sense. It was a common sense thing. And normally NASCAR just overlooks that and just does something completely, completely asinine. So that's where my mind went when I saw all this news. And like Matt said, like, you know, the inside road courses are gone. I think they had to make a choice. And the choice was, hey, we already have a lot. It's kind of bloated with road courses anyway. The car doesn't handle well there. So I'm glad to see them kind of getting rid of that. And we all know these man-made road courses, what else do? They tear up a ton of race cars. And these cars, they ain't cheap to put together. And these teams, I don't think they like that a lot. So I think this is going to be good overall.
I like we've always said too, like we always applaud NASCAR for trying new things, right? Like they tried the Roval, they tried the Indy road course, they tried the Daytona road course, and I applaud them even more when they realize not working, we got to change it up again. We gave it a shot, a couple of years at each of those tracks, not really gelling well with the vehicle that we have on track right now, so we've got to change it up again. So I don't know if that's Ben Kennedy or whoever up top, but I got to applaud them for not only being willing to change, but to reverse some of the changes that weren't working.
And that's the thing too, as they continue to work on this car's short track and road course package, I mean, they've been trying for all year long to make adjustments and testing new things. According to the drivers, it doesn't seem like anything's really changing the way we would hope. But at least now they're making the steps to try to give us a better on-track, you know, experience. The thing with Indy, though, Indy didn't put on a lot of great racing with the old car either. And that's kind of why they moved over to the road course. So it should be interesting to see what this new car gives us on that oval to see if either one performs better than the other. They might end up both kind of being the same. And it's like, oh, you know, but I think this new car has been pretty good on Pocono, and Indy in my mind is pretty similar to Pocono with the long straightaways, you know, turn one into that second. It's not like one and two, like a normal oval. It's like one straightaway, two straightaway. So like, I'm sure we'll see some cool drafting and stuff. It might be exciting. I'm excited just to see that they try it out and give us, what people have been asking for. But next piece of news, something that we could have talked about last week. We saw a tweet that said the announcement was coming, and we didn't believe it because it was from Private Porno 69 on Twitter, who is a woman.
Private Porno 69, man. He had the insider info.
She had the insider info.
Whoa.
Apparently it is a woman that runs that burner account. And Kyle Busch is selling KBM to Spire Motorsports. He will continue to run 5 truck races for them next season, as he normally would for his truck team. What do you guys think about the kind of bombshell news, KBM selling?
I think, without knowing, so I'll just preface it with, like, I have no freaking clue. I don't know Kyle Busch personally, but, like, I think it's a financial thing. I know he's hinted toward it in the recent...
Mike Bagley, MRN, and The Morning Drive on SiriusXM had an interview with Kyle Busch talking about the reasoning, and originally it was going to be a partnership between him and Spire. Yep. They were going to be like co-owners, and he ended up just selling the whole thing because it kind of turned out to be easier that way. So it wasn't like we were speculating in text messages of being in a financial deal and whatnot But I mean, you know, he could
think of it. I was just going to say, and again, it was just me speculating, but apparently I was wrong anyway. But my whole theory was working off of, I know, you know, he's selling his giant house. I know that he said when he signed on with RCR that it wasn't necessarily the deal that he was hoping for, and that he was going to have to make some lifestyle adjustments because he wasn't going to be making as much money as he was in the past.
Yeah.
So I was just speculating. It was a reckless speculation, but that's where I was going to go with it. But I would have been wrong anyway.
Yeah, no, and you know what? I was glad I was listening to The Morning Drive yesterday, because I would have been thinking the same thing too. You see people start liquidating assets like that. You think like, oh no, what's going on? Also, we thought maybe it would be to help fund Brexton's young racing career. I know he's spending a lot more time at the dirt track with Brexton throughout the week and everything. But what about you, Eric? What do you think about KBM being sold to Spire?
Yeah, I mean, he's still going to have like a say in it, I think they said. Like, he's still going to like have like an overview. He's still like going to run advisor races role. With
yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's still technically going to be around that. And I think this is all for Brexton, to be honest with you. I think he knows, and I think we've all seen that he's going into dad mode and, you know, kind of steering his focus on Brexton and his racing career. And, you know, one thing I saw on Twitter where someone like made the speculation or whatever was when Richard Childress gave him Brexton, I'm talking about, that $100 bill. And I was like, you can race for me anytime. Here's like $100. This is a contract thing or whatever. And it's like, yeah. Got my head spinning. Like, maybe Kyle Busch will buy into RCR now, you know? So he's an advisor for Spire. That's there. Brexton will get a ride in that truck. And then he's part of RCR to keep his hands on it. So I just think it's the main focus is, I think, the whole thing, Brexton. I think he's looking into the future and they're playing it smart where, and we all know this, when you get older, your priorities change. You don't need the fancy this, the big house. And like, I think they're realizing that, hey, maybe we don't need this. So, hey, let's downsize. It'll help Brexton in the long run. And I just think it's something that, obviously it's speculation, but I see Kyle Busch changing into full dad mode.
That's the thing too, though, the whole house situation, like that's something we discussed off air, but we found he listed his home for sale. But he might be going to a bigger house too. Like, who knows what he's doing, you know?
Yeah.
But again, like, I could see like that type of thing happening in the future. KB's definitely a big picture type guy. So he's looking down the road for his kid's career too. So
you
gotta
be looking at what Denny and Brad are doing too, and being like,
oh,
hey,
yeah.
I have a truck team that was hugely successful, and like, hey, let me give it a shot in the Cup Series too. So I think that's the competitive side in Kyle Busch that I think that is a reason why too. Like, oh yeah. Denny, you could be a team owner, and Brad, I could be too, you know? So I think maybe if you're not going to be competitive in a car, I think he still wants to beat his fellow drivers as an owner and their teams.
Yeah. And I know Kyle Busch is still young in terms of his racing career. I think he's only 38 right now, so he's got plenty of years left in him. But, you know, just like Brad Keselowski said when he took over and he bought a portion of RFK, you know, that's him looking towards, what am I going to do after retirement? You know, I'm not going to be racing all the time, looking to expand. So you never know. Maybe that little nugget into RCR, you never know. Could happen. Speaking of sons, Jeff Burton's son, Harrison Burton, will return to the Wood Brothers 21 car. I know we've been critical of Harrison Burton's career thus far in the Cup Series, but what do you guys think about him returning to the 21?
Meh.
Yeah.
Meh.
Yeah. We hope it improves, but you know, Penske as a whole hasn't been the greatest this season, and you know.
Right. I don't think we've seen the best out of what that car could do, what Harrison could do, because we all been talking about the lack of Ford and Penske and how they've been off. Yeah. So let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's let them learn. Let's let them take their notes, and hopefully Ford, you know, comes out next year and give him another year and let's see how, because you could compare him to a lot of other drivers in that Ford camp that we all thought would win races, maybe even multiple races, like Chase Briscoe, who is sitting in 30th something in the points.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is going on? So
but don't forget, he did have that NACADUCT penalty.
Yeah. I mean, even besides that, though, I mean, it's still just like the performance hasn't been there. So I'll give Harrison another year and see what he does. I don't hate it. I think that Wood Brothers car, the rotation's always there. Like, I don't know. I'm a consistency guy. Keep him in the car. Let him get some time and make it consistent there. So I don't mind it.
I have hope for Harrison Burton in that car because I think he is talented. And I'm going to compare him to Cole Custer right now. So Cole Custer was fantastic in the Xfinity Series. Finished runner-up to the championship like 2 years in a row. He was. You go back.
No. This isn't the part I'm disagreeing with.
Yeah, no. So the reason why I'm bringing up Cole Custer is because I heard a quote from him when he moved up to the Cup Series. He said he was lost. Like, he was out to lunch, didn't know what to do. Xfinity Series, he knew exactly what he had to do every race. Pit strategy, all that stuff. Like, he knew how to break down his car, everything. He said when he got to the Cup Series, it was a completely different animal. Of course, it was that COVID year, and he really struggled. And then this past year, I heard Harrison Burton in an interview say, things are finally starting to slow down for me. And that means, like, his thought process and his vision in the car. You know, like, you're going 180, but your brain is also keeping up at that same speed, you know? And eventually, like, it's like fighter pilots or whatever, like their reaction time is way quicker. They're not even thinking about it because their body's automatically doing it. And that's what Harrison Burton was kind of alluding to. Finally, he's getting to the point where things are slowing down. He doesn't have to think as much and he can just make moves, you know?
And yeah, because I mean, the thing is, you're 100% right, Whitey. Xfinity to Cup, everybody just assumes what? Oh, this car and that car. They're different cars.
Yeah.
Well, you got to think. The race length is different.
Exactly.
The stage length is different.
The aggression. And
there's those little things that are different where, okay, you know you're racing for 150 laps. You know how to take care of your tires on a 20-lap run because that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
Now, take that 20-lap run, turn that into a 45-lap run that you have to save your tires. And learning that skill, that takes time. That takes time behind the seat. And that just takes notes and being friends with other drivers and listening to them and learning from them and being like kind of a sponge. You have to absorb everything that you can. So it seems like he's doing that, Whitey. Yeah. Like, he's absorbing the stuff he needs to absorb. And now he could maybe next year take all of that and put it the together. Racetrack.
And
you know, the gap level from trucks to Xfinity is about right here. And the level from Xfinity to Cup, it's like football, right? Like the level of competition from high school football to college football, there's a gap, right?
Yeah.
The talent pool is huge in high school football. Then when you get to college football, it's a more concentrated, you know, level of individuals who are really good at what they do. And then once you get to the professional ranks, it's the best of the best, most elite people in the entire world. And that talent pool is razor thin, and you can't make errors like you are making an Xfinity or truck.
Yeah.
And so when you get to the Cup Series, there's no room for errors. There's little, like, and not to mention, you don't get the benefit of the doubt after a certain amount of time too, right? Oh, like, yeah, a year or two in, and yeah, if you're not performing, people are writing you off.
Absolutely.
And so it's tough. It's a dog eat dog world. And so we all like Harrison Burton. We all think we know what he's capable of. It's just, and I guess the Wood Brothers do too. So they're willing to give him that, what is it, third year now, and give him that chance to see what he can do.
And that's what I was going to say. After I heard that interview, like, I haven't seen a ton out of him, But I've seen flashes where it's like, okay, he had a good run here. And it wasn't just like a super speedway type run where he's like, oh, you know, he finished in top 15. And then for the next seven races, he finishes sub 30th, you know, where it really is, you know, feast or famine for him, you know, and the flashes of great driving could be in just one stage, you know, but the potential's there. So I applauded the Wood Brothers for sticking with him too, just to see that development, you know, because a lot of those guys don't have that chance, you know. Speaking of someone who's on their way out, unfortunately, Kevin Harvick was disqualified after finishing second this week for two missing windshield fasteners. What do you guys think about NASCAR dropping the hammer and DQing Kevin Harvick and all the fallout?
It was just kind of unfortunate. They were there. The fasteners made it every lap besides the last 52.
Yeah.
So, unfortunate. It's not like it was anything crazy. That at a place like that, you think they're not going to want to have those fastened down?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it wasn't an intentional thing. It was just, damn, like, that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even the experts said it wouldn't create any type of competition advantage, but right, it is a safety issue, and I think that's kind of why they threw the hammer down at that, you know.
Sounds like someone's impact gun when they were installing those wasn't going at full torque.
Ooh. Yeah, I guess that. Well, they sealed them up, but I saw a lot of tweets towards Rodney Childress, like, oh, you need Loctite, and he's like, dude, you can't put Loctite on Lexan, it cracks. So I'm like, all right, well, there you go. That's what you get for being an armchair engineer. So we won't even try on this podcast. Let's see. Next piece. Australian V8 supercar team. Erebu Motors? E-R-E-B-U. I'm not exactly sure. Erebu? Plans to team up with RCR to field a car for Brody Kostecki to try and race some select cup dates, probably mostly on road courses. Brody, of course, drove for, I believe, the Chicago Street Course and maybe Indy Road Course, too. Another V8 supercar guy looking to break into the world of NASCAR. What do you guys just think about, in general, another V8 supercar guy looking to come over and run some more NASCAR races?
Two thumbs up, man. We saw what SVG could do. I don't know anything about this guy. This is the first time I'm hearing his name, but I can't knock it. You know, we saw what SVG was able to come over here and do, and he created a positive wave. So yeah, I'm all for it.
This guy is actually the points leader above SVG in that series. At the time when SVG was here, he was, I don't know about now, but he also ran in the 33 car for RCR and Xfinity a couple races too. It was this year, I think. So he's had a little experience over in the NASCAR world.
No, it was the 33 and Cup this year. It was
Cup?
Yeah, it was at the Indy Road Course. That was the one race. I thought he did the Chicago Street Course too, but no, it was just that one. And then he actually ran a couple K&N Pro East races back in 2013 and 14. So maybe we could see him on an oval too. He almost ran the full season in 14.
I'm all for it. I mean, yeah. I think this sport, you know, right now is on the verge of the transition from, you know, the old vets that everybody knows to this new generation of drivers coming up into the cup. And my thing is, and I'll say it all the time, just because I think it's the route to go. You know, once these guys in cup now are leaving, they're going to get filled by some of the main guys that are in Xfinity now. And I just think that opens up an opportunity for maybe some people from other sports worlds, like, you know, where they come from with the supercars, and, you know, to go to Xfinity and make their name there, like try that out first and then maybe go to cup or something. But I think there's gonna be a lot of open rides in the trucks, Xfinity, whatever, coming up in these next few years that might give those type of drivers and other series an opportunity to see what the ovals and NASCAR is all about. I mean, we're all about growing the sport, and I think this is part of that growth. And just the fact that other people want to come into our sport, you know, we saw that Takashi, Kobayashi come in, and, you know, that's a good sign for me and for the sport that it is growing and we're making waves throughout the racing world.
You know, I think is interesting too, because we saw kind of an influx of like IndyCar drivers. Juan Pablo Montoya was a V8 supercar driver too, right? Come in years and years ago.
Marcus Ambrose.
Pablo Montoya wasn't.
No,
he was IndyCar.
It was Marcus Ambrose I was thinking of from V8 Supercar. But a lot of people said like, oh, a lot of these guys are just coming in for the big money that NASCAR guys were pulling at the time because it was at like the height of the popularity of the sport. And it seems like, I don't know their intentions, but it seems like these guys just want to come over and race. They want to race in NASCAR in America. Like they're interested in racing NASCAR. And I think that's the difference. And I kind of like that. I like it a lot, to be honest with you. And then, the last piece of news, a lot of rumors with the schedule and whatnot. A lot of people are talking about Iowa Speedway getting a cup date, and it looks like it will, which means we were supposed to go up to Montreal, and it seems like that's not going to happen, so we'll probably end up at Iowa instead. What do you guys think about Cup cars going to Iowa?
I'm excited. We'll see what happens. I'm not excited that it's a Sunday night race on a non-holiday weekend, but you know, that's we could talk about that a different time when the time slot becomes official. But yeah, new track. Like I just said 10 minutes ago, you know, I like when NASCAR tries new things. I like when they shake things up. The schedule isn't the same year to year like it was for 20 years. So I guess a wait and see type thing for me.
Yeah, I'm just
EJ has an Xfinity win there, so I'll take it.
There you go. I'm just waiting for the schedule to come out. Like the anticipation, the waiting is just killing me. It's October 3rd.
Right? Wednesday?
That's what Bob said. Bob hinted, I think it was on Monday, the schedule probably most likely Wednesday. I'm excited about it too because everyone wants to know the dates, the time. That's how we know, okay, when's Pocono, when's this, when's that. People want to plan. You need to plan. So I heard it's I don't know. I've heard there's not a lot of craziness to it, but I just think it's because of the Olympics and some of the stuff they had going. I think after this year, we're going to get a schedule that's going to be maybe a little bit more diverse and crazy in 2025.
Yeah, I'm excited either way. I think we talked about a little bit too, like with the Olympics next year, like just having a nice kind of chunky break in the middle of summer should be good and interesting.
No pressure, man.
Yeah, so I'm excited. And I want to see Iowa. I think it'll be interesting. But we have a race weekend at Talladega to talk about. What's up, Matt?
I think we owe it to some fans to address a certain tweet that got sent out last week.
Oh, Jesus. I don't even want to talk about it. We got ripped apart by Bowman and Hendrick fans all weekend long.
I think we at least owe it to people who ever might be listening in a little explanation. We can move on. We don't have to get into detail. I'll even fucking say it. I don't care. So we have an insider within the industry that
he reached out to us.
We haven't been given any reason to not trust this source yet. Yeah. Got to bullshitting with this source. Source pretty much provided and stated that it was a rumor, not news, not insider info, just a rumor that we were fed Sammy Smith is not only moving to Junior Motorsports, which everyone knows about, that's a confirmed fact, but in 2025, he's going to possibly be jumping up the Cup into the 48 car. And so that was a rumor. We stated it as a rumor in our tweet. We got annihilated for it, but we stated it as a rumor in our tweet. We probably could have worded the tweet a little bit better. We made it a little cryptic for no reason.
Well,
but
I thought it would be fun to make it cryptic. Happened.
So we were given information about a rumor. I keep using that word because that's what it is.
Yeah.
That Sammy Smith is going to run Junior Motorsports for a year and then move up to the 48 in Cup. And that Ally, if that were to happen, that Ally, you know, would move on with Bowman. Again, we can't confirm this. It's a year and a half away. We have no idea what's true or not. Again, it's a rumor that we were fed. But I'm going to tell everybody right now that if it becomes true, I'm going to annihilate everyone who annihilated us on Twitter.
Yeah, that's me too. Me too.
I don't care. Bring on the haters. I don't care.
We're like,
but the whole thing about it is there was more to the puzzle than what that tweet just told.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Because the whole thing is where Bowman would go. This is why it would all make sense. Where he would go would be Chevy camp. the whole reason is Junior signed Sammy Smith because Junior would. There's a whole lot more. It was just to get these going, people. Yep. Use your brain out there. Think a little bit. It's, dude, this, you ever hear about silly season? That where it's a little silly season action. So,
well, the Bowman fans get relax. The Bowman fans got a little silly in the comments, accusing us of.
Apparently, we're on crack.
A lot of crack comments. All
these things got thrown at us.
We're just liars making shit up. that was my favorite because I'm like, no, we talked to a guy. If you go back and listen to a couple episodes, you can figure out exactly who we talked to too. But whatever.
So now we know who doesn't listen and who listens. So
exactly. Exactly. But we're like Jay and Silent Bob. If this happens in 2025, I got receipts, motherfucker. I'm showing up to everybody's doors. Yeah. But. But we got a race weekend to talk about. We were down in Talladega, Xfinity Series race. Truck race. I'm sorry. I put in the Xfinity Series.
I hate this again. Why do they do this to us?
I don't know. Anyways, Brett Moffitt was the big winner in the truck series. But the big story that I didn't mention in news, because we'll get to it in Eric's checkers and wreckers. Nick Sanchez and Matt Crafton, a little post-race activity in the back of the garage. Someone walked away with a broken nose and probably a bruised ego, too. Do you guys want
to talk? We'll get to it. So we don't double down on it. But yeah.
And then in the Cup Series, Ryan Blaney led four times for eight laps. The race lasted 3 hours, 7 minutes, 25 seconds. We saw four cautions for 19 laps, which not bad for Talladega. 70 lead changes among 24 different drivers. Ryan Blaney, William Byron, Denny Hamlin, Corey LaJoie, and Austin Cindric, your top five. Kevin Harvick did come in second, but of course he was disqualified, so everyone shifted forward. So keep that in mind. But fellas, let's jump into the race grades.
It's our NASCAR weekend race grade.
All right, and let's start with Matt. Matt, this weekend, what did you think about the race?
Loved it, man. Loved it. A+. If you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you know, I'm a super speedway guy. Like that's my jam, man. I love super speedway racing so much. It sucks that that's the last one until February, right? Until the Daytona 500. But I mean, we were three wide for a good portion of that. We had cars that were all squirrely that at any given moment, you didn't know if they were going to bounce off each other and create a big one. I just loved everything I saw. It was hard to pass, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in some senses, it was hard to pass, but hasn't super speedway racing always kind of been hard to pass? It's always the same characters that always find their way up to the front because they're the ones who know how to manipulate the air, know how to, you know, hook up with the right cars that have the right momentum at the right times of the race. So, yeah, it's always going to be hard to pass. It always has been. But the right guys who know how to manipulate that style of racing are always going to find their way to the front. We saw it again on Sunday. And, you know, Blaney, who is an excellent super speedway racer, was able to get himself to the front, stay to the front, and be in position at the end. So, yeah, I loved everything about it. And what's a race without Denny Hamlin speeding penalty?
I mean, especially in the playoffs, you know, shooting yourself in the foot once again.
Yeah. So A+ for me. I loved it.
All right. Nice. How about you, Eric? What did you think about the race? I know you had a little bit of a shindig up there. You had the atmosphere of the people.
Yeah, I had a few people up. It was just a couple of us. And it was awesome. I agree with Matt. I gave it an A. It was everything. Now, I wasn't a real huge fan of super speedway racing, but over these years, you know, I've become more and more of a fan of it. And you have to appreciate certain parts of super speedway racing. And, you know, like Matt said, three wide for a majority of that race. And even when it was two wide, the guy, like Dave Moody said it best, it seems like luck is involved. Everyone says luck at Daytona, luck at Talladega. I don't think so, you know, and he even said it. He goes, the best of the best are always up front for a reason. Because you have to have balls to make these moves. You have to work for these moves. You have your spotter. You have the handling of the car. You need a lot of people at their peak best to win at a super speedway. And That is what I look for in those races. And that's what you got. Three wide, inch apart. To me, that is still excellent racing for not crashing, going back and forth. And for people that are new to the sport or don't watch a lot of super speedway racing, for what Matt is saying, like the people that know how to manipulate the air, the people that are good there, they know how to make that. You only could do that and make those moves at certain points of the race. When you are around people, you're comfortable doing those moves around or with, because they know your tendencies, you know their tendencies. Now, you know, I give a lot of credit to Riley Herbst because it was only his fourth Cup Series start. He was up front around a lot of people that don't know how to race him. He didn't know how to race against them, being pushed, being shoved. So there's a lot that goes into these super speedway races that's different from a normal race. And, you know, like Matt said, you had these people that were stuck in the middle. Well, go out and make a move then. Like, you can't win if you're just riding around an eighth and being comfortable riding around an eighth. I always loved Kenseth because when they're running too wide, he was always one of the first ones to say, you know what? I'm tired of running around here. I'm not moving. I'm not going to pass. Bop, up to the top, create my own line. Someone come with me. Now, most of the time, no one does, and he gets hung out to dry. Yeah. But you go to the back, you go again. Someone will eventually, like, at least then, the next time you go to a super speedway race, you're known as a guy that you can work with. He's going to go. He wants to go. That's why I love EJ. Popped up to the top. Run with me. He wants to get to the front. Had a pit row penalty, just like Denny Hamlin. But they both, guess what? Were a lap down. Caught a caution. Back on the lead lap. They both drove right back up to the front. So, like, yeah, you can't pass if you don't want to pass. If you want to pass, you could go and pass. But guess what? It's hard. It's difficult. You have to want it, and you have to be willing to make that move and put your car in that position. And you have to have the trust in your spotter, and the handling of your car still has to be there. And I will say this, the bodies of this car are still sketchy. And I think that's why we see a lot of, you know, maybe people not wanting to force the push or not wanting to make some of these moves because they don't line up the front bumpers and the back bumpers of these cars, specifically the Chevys, the nose is pointed. And they don't, you even get in an inch off of the middle of the car where you're supposed to be, or you go a little too far into the turn, you're going to send the guy. So to me, man, three wide, even though the lines weren't going back and forth to run that, it was exhilarating because, like Matt said, you're waiting for that Blaney, for that Denny, for somebody to make that awesome move. Loved seeing Brad running up front. I thought he had a car. To me, it was a really, really exciting Talladega race.
Yeah. Man, I wish I could agree. Do you guys get good sleep in hotels when you're on vacation and stuff?
It depends, but usually no.
I get awful sleep, like the worst sleep. And I got shit sleep on Saturday night, so I was exhausted for Sunday's race. So I'll preface it by saying that. That probably impacts a lot of my score. I gave it a B minus. Again, I was tired watching it. I think, like, just the mindset and everything, but I didn't think this race was that great, honestly. I even watched it for a second time yesterday to see if there was anything I missed. And I think even watching a second time, because I knew what was going to happen, I didn't find it that exciting either. So, like, I wasn't on the edge of my seat for the first two stages. I felt like I watched two trains run side by side and nothing was happening. I know there was a lot of lead changes, but I didn't think there was anything really exciting about those lead changes, because it'd be like, you know, the top lane gets a nice run, 1.5 cars pass out the bottom lane, and then by the time you get to the back stretch, then that lane kind of starts accordioning back while the bottom lane gets a run, and then they take the lead back in turn 3 and 4. And I really didn't like it, and I think it's because guys can't create their own runs. They're waiting on that bubble of air that Dale Jr. is talking about. Like, now, guys, like, it seems like you can't even really get to the bumper to push. It's you're pushing it with that bubble of air, which was a problem with the old car at 1.5 miles. So now it seems like it's a problem with the new car at super speedways. And then you can't side draft. Like, I liked when guys could side draft, slow down that other lane, and they get a nice big long run. Even when it got three wide, super impressive that they were able to keep it and not wreck. But at the same time, I didn't really feel like it was that exciting battles for the lead and everything. Did I say I gave it a B minus? I still give it a B minus because it was a good race. I was tired, so I'm adding all that in, and I'm kind of bumping it up from where I felt. But I didn't like the spring Talladega race, and I didn't really like the fall one either. I did like the third, like first and second stage, I just thought sucked. Third stage, I thought was great. Photo finish, you know, the build up and everything. But man, I don't know, just watching those two lanes, and I thought like maybe I'm crazy. So I went and I looked at the stats of the lead changes. First 22 laps, Joey Logano led every lap except for two. Eric Almirola made his way up for lap six, and William Byron made his way up for lap 19. So that's just two lines going back and forth. No real movement. And then we went Priest, Stenhouse, Dillon, and Bell. I'm pretty sure that was during green flag pit stops. And then we saw Cindric, Stenhouse, swap the lead that many times, just back and forth. Again, just two trains going back and forth. Blaney, Herbst.
Blaney, super speedway racing, though, Whitey.
Well, yeah, that's what it always is, man.
But that's the thing. Even when it would go three lanes, like it's just those front cars, whoever's leading the train, you weren't able to shuffle guys to the back and move them out of the way with the side draft like you used to be able to. You couldn't get, there was no one in the sucker hole. Like, did we see anyone get sucked into that middle lane and lose all their position? No, not really. In fact, I saw the middle lane do something I've never seen before, where it looked like the whole entire field was throwing the middle finger at me because it was the bottom lane, the top lane, just sitting there, and then six cars in the middle just running a train around it, and they never caught up. And even if they did catch up, it would just go back and forth for one lap, and that was it. And then those trains would fall apart. Like, I thought it was some of the most boring super speedway racing I ever saw, because if you were stuck four back, you weren't moving anywhere. And even
because
if you
were, want to, because if, you were comfortable but, there, and that's where you wanted to be.
But here's the thing.
Like, even, if you want to make a move, you pop out and make a move. But I like it, Whitey, because guess what? Everyone complains about what? And you're good. You should be one of them right now. You're part of the Toyota camp. What do they have? Six fucking cars. So guess what? They're at a disadvantage. But I saw 400 cars lined up on the bottom that couldn't do shit. Yeah. And I love that, because that allows everybody the fair opportunity, and it puts the actual driver's talent at a super speedway in his hands. Yes. It's not relying on the 3, 4, 5, 18 cars behind you to get you up to the front. No, you have to get up front. Your spotter has to get you up front. And that's what happens.
But when you're running two trains side by side and there's not even a full gap for one car to switch lanes, you're not seeing any movement.
Dude, and then people up front, they were blocking. They were going back and forth all day. That's what you do. And you wait for that guy to mess up. And it just so happens that the guys up front, Almirola, Brad Keselowski, Joey Logano, guess what they do well? Yeah. They run well up front, and they know what to do up front. So they're not going to make a mistake. You have to wait for a Riley Herbst to be up there in the top four, top five. He backed up too far from Harvick because he got a little squirrely. Josevar got a little squirrely. There's your gap. Now, Whitey, you see that gap. Are you willing to go in that gap?
Yeah.
Or are you not willing to go in that gap? You have to make that move.
Here's the problem. And here's my whole complaint about it all. The gap never came. The first two stages, I never saw a car get more than a car and a half's length away until a giant run would come after, like, I don't know, 10 laps. Whitey. Finally, that one car would get enough of a run where he was lights out far away, and then fall back and get in line on the bottom because that's all he could do. And then he swaps with the lead with whoever was behind him over and over again.
You also have to keep in mind what part of the season are we in right now?
The playoffs.
People are being safe. The dudes who are in the playoffs want to be there at the end, so they're not going to make the risks in the first and second stage. And the guys that aren't in the playoffs don't want to be the ones that cause the big one and wreck a bunch of people's playoffs. So, yeah, they're going to be for a super speedway race. Like, yeah, we probably saw a little bit more of a reserve super speedway race, but at the end of the day, that's not any different than what we've seen in years past.
And I understand. I mean,
you look at what we said about stage one all season long.
Yeah, it's just
no matter what type of track it is.
Oh, like, was there any practice? No. Do these guys, were there a lot of new guys in that field?
Yeah.
Riley Earp up front. These guys, you have to figure out who you could push, who you can't push, and that's what they were doing. You run single file, I could push this guy, and I get out of line, you go to the back.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable being pushed. Let me go up here. And I just think the first stage, every race this year, it's a learning curve, and it's you're just explaining super speedway racing, and this is hilarious.
I know I'm explaining it. I know I'm just explaining like what happened, but in my mind, it's been the same since the new car took over.
Why do you love tandem? Why do you want two cars to shove each other out and have six cars, two each, battle each other all over the race?
I want tandem.
I understand
drafting
where you're coming from.
Racing is fun too in its own right, though.
And I want side drafting. That's what I want. And if you go back the last two seasons with the next gen car, every single super speedway race, I say I miss the side draft because that's how guys got other guys out of shape where they'd have to jump out of line. You know, they were able to manipulate the air around the competition. Now there's no manipulation of the air. Now it's just timing when I'm going to jump because I see a run coming or hoping that I get a run that builds up in the next five laps. And I hope that I could get my car just an inch further where I could drop down and block the next lane. That's it. Like all it is moving one guy up and shuffling over, moving up, shuffling over, moving up, shuffling over. There's
you know what that shuffling is doing? Some of that shuffling is on purpose.
Well, yeah.
Some of that shuffling is trying to get to, okay, Ricky Stenhouse is great being up front, which we want him to pull us.
Yeah.
But Ricky Stenhouse is an eighth. The spotters are all talking, hey, we have to get Ricky up front for the Chevys, not just for Ricky. We need to get him up front because he could pull this line of Chevys the best. So, hey, you go here, you go there. You hold up, push back, let Ricky down here. Boom, some guy goes down low.
But it's, I didn't even see
all
that.
Of that is calculated the race three wide.
But I didn't see any of that. I didn't see a lot of movement in the middle of the pack. I didn't see a lot of shuffling around. That was my complaint.
They were so tight. There were drivers that when you're a good super speedway racer, that went to the back on purpose.
Okay.
Almost every super speedway race.
Yeah.
And drive up through like it's nothing.
And they tried to make
it on Sunday too. You know what I mean? Look at Denny and EJ both did it. Both had penalties and both had no problem going up to the front. You want to know why? Because they know how to do it and they're not afraid to do it. And if you want to get up front, you can run up front. I think that's my biggest thing in super speedways. If you want to run up front, you're going to run up front. If you want to go to the back, you could go to the back.
Yeah.
If you're comfortable saying, oh, this is where I am, my car is clean, I'm not in the playoffs, I don't want to be the guy that causes it, you're just going to stay right where you are and be a teammate as a manufacturer for somebody else and wait for the orders from the spotter to come down. That's my belief in super speedway racing. And like, I agree, Whitey, that's the one thing I do agree with you on is that there was no side draft. This car, even at any track, the side drafting is non-existent.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, guess what the side drafting does too? Causes the big one and tears up a ton of race cars.
And I will give it, I was happy to see that we didn't have a huge big one until like the last lap, you know, with Corey LaJoie and everything. You know, I don't know, man. I feel like I watched guys jump to the third lane all day long, get this close to almost catching up to the middle lane, and then it just fell apart. And it was just rinse and repeat over and over again.
You had six or seven cars in that top line all day.
Yeah.
No one else was willing to do it because you're not willing to go up there with that guy because the guy that's in front of you at the time is more important for the manufacturer than it is for that guy's race win. And it's silly that these races have turned into manufacturer versus manufacturer.
I hate
not
that
necessarily
too.
Driver versus driver. I can't stand that.
Yeah.
But I was grateful when I saw 400 cars on the bottom at the end of that race. I said, this is going to be Hendrick's easy win.
Yeah.
Easy win. They couldn't do shit because guess what? Those cars, they can't line up and connect. So you have 400 cars on the bottom at Talladega. You're going to think they're going to hook up. Teammates, Chevy's all behind them. They're going to push up to the front. They couldn't do it.
Yeah, and that's
so,
my problem.
I like the fact that they couldn't hook up and shove and take advantage of that as a quote-unquote four-car team. You know what I mean? You have one car team out there like Ricky Stenhouse, and he stands no chance against 400 cars. But on Sunday, he stood a chance.
And that's the problem I have with it, where it's like you have four guys hooking up and they can't do shit because they're just stuck in this same straight line. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know. Again, I was tired.
Not that you hate super speedway racing, to be honest.
And the thing that kills me is I loved it. I loved it up until the next gen, and the next gen killed super speedway racing for me. It really did. It really fucking destroyed it.
We just did a complete 180, you and I. I was like that 2-3 years ago, and then now it's turning full circle here.
It breaks my heart because it was my favorite. I got so excited for Talladega and Daytona every year. And like this past weekend, I was like, man, this is just another fucking two-train run. Instead of having a single train up top and then eventually guys would drop down, just two trains running side by side all fucking day long. All day long. It was boring.
If Freddie is proclaiming super speedway racing dead, should we have a moment of silence?
No,
I think so. For Whitey's sake, super speedway racing is dead.
It's not dead. I'm just not enjoying it like Freddie, I used to.
A moment of silence. It doesn't matter about your moment of silence because super speedway racing is alive and well, brother.
To me, I'm not enjoying it. I don't like it. I wish I did.
How did Tyler Reddick do on Sunday, Whitey?
I don't know. Because you want to know why? Because he got stuck in the back of the fucking second lane. They were trying to make a third lane, and no one would go with him. And he couldn't make any fucking moves. I watched.
Trust issues out there.
I watched everyone from four. From row four back, not move all fucking day long. They didn't move all day long.
Super speedway racer? I don't know. Tyler Reddick good on super speedways?
This isn't a Tyler Reddick thing. It's not. I didn't care where Tyler Reddick came in. This was an enjoyment of the race, and I did not enjoy any of it. I enjoyed
and
the.
You're entitled to that, you son of a bitch. Yeah. You are damn entitled to that opinion, Whitey.
Thank you. Anyways.
Three wide for the lead.
It's this week's checkers and records.
I'll tell you, that super speedway race was probably a hell of a lot more exciting than this one. But anyways, since we started with Matt for the race grades, we'll start with Daytona Ron for the checkers and records.
All right, so we'll start with the records here. Question for you boys. Where the fuck has Kyle Busch been?
Oof.
RCR. Get my records. Probably the worst playoff run of his career. Sitting dead last right now, almost in a must-win situation in a points deficit. And, you know, if not the help he gets, it's a pretty much a must-win situation where he could very well win. He's a good road course racer, but with what I've seen out of him, I don't think there's a prayer he wins this race.
I don't think so either.
The weirdest part about it though, boys, is like, he doesn't really seem to care that he's flopping in the playoffs. He had a great beginning of the season, and then it just went downhill. And like Matt said a few weeks ago, when he was reversing around the track, I can't wait for Kyle Busch's interview. This is gonna be spectacular. Kyle Busch asked, couldn't wait for it. Nah, it happened. Yeah. I don't care. Right back to the garage. Like it just seems like. I get it too, in a way where I kind of put it in perspective where maybe he thinks that, you know, first year RCR, three wins, maybe it's already a success.
Yeah.
And like, maybe he knew that the speed that they couldn't keep up with the other guys, they weren't going to find it by the end of this season. And the kind of car and the product that he has is what it was going to be. But man, where the fuck has Kyle Busch been, dude?
Not only that, just RCR as a whole. Austin Dillon didn't finish once again. This is his 10th DNF in 31 starts. One third of his season, he didn't finish. You know, like you said, KB had that great start to the season. Great promise. It's like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. Kyle Busch has arrived. RCR is on the upswing. And ever since the playoffs started. And it doesn't look like he's going to make it out of the round of 12. I didn't see it coming. I didn't see it coming at all. And again, to your point too, he doesn't seem too bothered by it. So, like, is it
which is weird for Kyle Busch?
Is it because he knows he's outperforming the equipment and they're doing his the best they can? Or
and they don't want he doesn't want to shit on him for
like,
for
dude, like, he won the second race of the season at Auto Club. Like it was like out of the gate he won.
Oh yeah, and he almost won the Daytona 500 if it wasn't for that last caution. You know, like. I don't know, man. I don't know. He still has 15
top 10s. I mean, I guess he did get screwed at Dega, too, though, with Ricky running out of gas right in front of him.
Yeah, he got fucked
there. That was an unfortunate situation.
You know, But overall, he hasn't been a threat. I feel like even the drivers out there don't feel like he's a threat. And when Kyle Busch in the playoffs doesn't feel like a threat, I don't know, man. That just doesn't sit well with me.
No, I agree.
I gave him my wreckers. Now my checkers, I gave it to Matt Crafton. Yeah. Let's go Crafton, dude. Teach these young sons of bitches driving out there like maniacs. Got to teach him a lesson. And we hear how truck series, even go down to Bowman Gray and the modified series, how they're racing each other like dick bags, smashing each other after the race is over, going after each other, fighting in the back of the garage. And guess what? That's not how it's done. And these young kids think that's how it is done. And, you know, you have.
I'm sorry to stop you. I have to stop you right there. Would you rather be a dick bag or a bag of dicks?
God, we could sit on this one for an hour.
It's the same thing. Trick question.
All right. No, because a bag of dicks is multiple dicks in a bag, but a dick bag is the bag you put on your dick. So if you're a dick bag, you're getting put on a dick. You're getting put on someone else's dick.
Doesn't your mother listen to this podcast?
She does. My mother curses like a sailor. She's just as dirty. Where do you think I get it from? Actually, that's a Robbie Shred joke. So shout out to Shredder. Anyways, back to it.
I will say this. Everyone, as soon as it happened, was ripping Crafton apart. Yeah. And I'm on Twitter. I'm going, why are they ripping this guy apart right now when there's only one side of the story out? There's no video of anything happening. This is the problem with the world today. The media is the judge, the jury, and the executioner. And you can't do that. You just can't do it. So Crafton did come out with his statement and said what happened before the cameras were rolling, and this is what went down, and there's sucker punch this, and, you know, DBC, this is a sucker punch. If you see it coming, that's not this. You don't have to get into that, because that's not the point of it. The point of it is somebody had to do this to these young drivers to say, hey, you're not going to make it very far in this NASCAR world if you're going to be racing like this.
Making enemies and, on the track.
Yeah. So I don't know if I would have been as hard on Sanchez, but during the race broadcast, twice they had on air his crew chief, or it was his spotter, come on, and they played his radio saying, hey, buddy, you can't be doing that. Don't be pushing so hard. Yeah. You're being too aggressive. You can't do that. Dial it back. And right after that, he goes and does what he does and drives and shit. It's like, what are you doing? There was no get. What are you trying to do here? You were just warned multiple times to stop racing that aggressive, but they don't care. They're young. Oh, I'm filled with this. I'll go move here. I'll go in here. Oh, it's just not. I'm in the playoffs. I'm going to go. I could do whatever I want. Well, buddy, you go ahead. By all means, do what you want.
But sometimes you got to take your
licks. What's the popular meme right now? Fuck around, find out. Sanchez found out.
He did.
And he got hit. And you know what? I love it, because someone had to fucking do it. And you know, all props to Crafton for his statement, everything. And, you know, all, I don't know. I wait for all evidence to come out. And at one point he was getting ripped because only one story was out. Why was his story so much more believable than what Crafton's story was afterward? And when there's no video, we saw with the fines, $10,000 fine. That was it, because, hey, NASCAR probably knows, hey, it is what it is.
Well, no,
it was Crafton too, because he's a truck series veteran. Like, that's his series, right? Like, that's where he makes his bread and butter. And for him to, you know, we talk about it on this show. Other shows talk about it, how there's just no respect at all in the truck series. And for a guy like Crafton, who's been in the truck series for what, damn near a decade, go earn that respect back from these young guys. Like, hey, listen, we're not going to take that shit. That's not how shit's going to fly around here. And he punched him in the nose, and good for him. Good for him. Everyone's saying, I guess one of the big things too, is like everyone's saying how, like, well, Nick Sanchez is a kid, Matt Crafton's a grown ass man. Nope, not in this sport, bud. No, you're a grown ass man. You strap on that helmet just like everyone else does. Welcome to the world now. Like, that's just, it is what
that's
it
what
is.
I said the one time with the whole, you know, Ty Gibbs thing, when Whitey tried, you know, the one choice, like, oh, but he's only, I don't care. If you're in a professional setting, you took that jump. Now you're in the arena, buddy. You know what I mean? You stepped in, and this is what's going to happen.
All right. How about you, Matt? What's your checkers and your wreckers? I don't have anything, Chad. I wish we could see the video of it all. I want to know exactly what happens, because every site has their story, and then there's the truth of what actually happened. And
Especially because it looks like it was a fucking hell of a shot too. We thought Chastain getting rocked a few months ago was a good shot. Nick Sanchez, he got connected by I wish we saw it, but. Anywho, my checkers, it's low-hanging fruit this week. I almost never give my checkers to the winner, but I'm going to go ahead and give it to Blaney. And I'm going to not only give it to Blaney, but I'm also with a little side of crow to eat too. Because as Eric mentioned earlier, you know, we questioned Blaney last week and we doubted him big time whether he had it in him, whether he could do it. And he went on to immediately win the race. So not only did Blaney earn an actual checkered flag this week, but more importantly, he earned Statman Matt's checkered flag.
I'm sure it's a treasured checkered flag for him in his heart.
I've mailed him a trophy.
Nice.
And I'll tell you what, there's a specific reason I picked Kyle Busch as my wreckers, because last week I tore apart Blaney and didn't think he had it in him, and he went out and won. So maybe I'll give a little luck to help my championship four come back alive here.
There you go. I like it. How about your wreckers? How about your wreckers, Matt?
My records is going to, once again, Corey LaJoie. Just again ran out of talent at the last 200 yards of the race. Just hooked the car in front of him, caused a big one for no good reason. Where was he going when he went and made that move that he did? And he hooked the car in front of him, spun out a bunch of cars, and could have been dangerous. Thank God it wasn't. We've seen some of these cars take flight recently. And yeah, we almost had it again. And for what? For what? And he's admitted, he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt anymore, because I know we've talked about this multiple times on this show, but after the Pocono wreck that he caused, he all but said, I didn't know how to handle the situation. I kind of froze in the moment, and whatever happened. And so in my mind, if that happened at Pocono, did that happen at Talladega too, where he got jittery at the end of the race and didn't know what to do?
No, in his post-race interview, he said he saw a hole opening up and he wanted to fill it. I didn't see any fucking hole opening up.
There's a video that I think NASCAR just released of the dash cam footage of four different cars. And I think one of them was Denny, who was right behind LaJoie. And there was no hole. There wasn't a hole. There was not even a glimmer of a hole. Not to mention, what were you going to try to do? You had 200 yards to the start finish line.
At that point, Denny went up high and wasn't even going to push him. Yeah. So he would have got hung out to dry anyway in the middle.
and then he goes on Twitter and he goes, "Oh, great top five, stacking pennies." Buddy, you just wrecked the entire field behind you.
And he's that's the part that irritates me about LaJoie. He doesn't even understand what he did.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand. He's walking around he just got a fourth place finish, and he's this rock star driver for doing it.
It's like, dude, buddy, you destroyed everybody.
It's insane.
Yeah. But I completely agree on that one. Fucking crazy. Is that all you have to add to that?
Yeah, that's all I have.
I don't even want to talk about it.
No. All right. Well, I'm giving my checkers to the guy that Corey LaJoie wrecked, Riley Herbst. This is his fourth Cup Series start and probably his best race to date. He's an up and down guy in the Xfinity Series. Always makes the playoffs, but doesn't really go far into them. A good, solid 10th place guy.
For when Statman Matt bets on him, puts him in the DraftKings lineup, then not so much.
Then he finishes 23rd.
I'm not going to lie, and I know this is your checkers, I don't want to make this about me. Every single time I've put Riley Herbst in an Xfinity lineup on DraftKings, every time he does something where it screws me. Every time. I don't even make lineups on DraftKings anymore, and it's
because of Riley Herbst.
I know this because you've in our group message have bitched about him before.
A lot. Reason. Yeah. It's out of nowhere. Don't even realize there's an Xfinity Series race on. You're like, fucking Riley Herbst, man.
Yeah, that's it, buddy. That's exactly it.
That all makes sense. You got money on it in a DraftKings lineup. But no, I thought he did a really good job. I know he's finished 10th place in last year's Daytona 500. But there was a ton of wrecks last year at the 500 and late And this one, I feel like he earned, like, I think, what, he finished 9th, right? Or 10th. And that was after he got wrecked pretty much damn near the line. He was going to finish in the top five if LaJoy didn't turn him the way he did. And he was up there all day. He led laps. He was racing with guys. I thought he was really impressive for a guy that I didn't even realize made 3 other cup starts before this one, because he just wasn't in it then, you know?
And then, the qualifying effort too, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, to only be your 4th time in a cup ride, to qualify up front and run up front. I was really impressed by him as well.
Yeah. And, just kudos to him, man. A good day for Riley Herbst. And you know what? I did like that white monster paint scheme. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I sent you guys.
Was that the Beast car? I think it was.
Yeah, which I don't even know if he's old enough to drink alcohol yet. Yeah. But it was the Tame the Beast energy beer deal. And then my wreckers, and nothing that he did, but I have to give it to Kevin Harvick for just an unfortunate disqualification. You know, the guy's on his way out. I want to see him finish in 2nd. I want to see him battling for the lead and hopefully get that win before the end of the season. And it just sucks, you know, it just sucks. Fucking bolts.
Riley Herbst, 24 years old.
Okay, so he can drink the Beast. Good for him. I hope he enjoyed
I'll
one
tell
after.
You what, buddy, the Kevin Harvick thing too, man, it's like, what is his nickname?
The Closer.
And what was he about to do at Talladega in his final season? And I'm like, at one point, I'm like, holy shit, he's about to do it again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And like, there was that excitement where it's like, oh my God, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, he came that close. So I agree. And I sent a video over to you guys today where he was talking to this little kid from Poland.
Yeah.
And it was really cool to see this little kid. And all the kid, Harvick kept asking him about, like, oh, what else do you do in Poland? He's every like, answer was NASCAR, waiting for NASCAR, watching NASCAR. He's like, oh, he's like, and they don't come out till 9 o'clock over there. And he's like, oh, he's like, does your mother let you stay up to watch the race? He goes, yeah, I get to stay up. And Harvick's like, that's cool. That's awesome. Like, getting the youth involved. That was a cool Kevin Harvick moment there. And I thought that was pretty funny.
Can I tell you guys something?
What's that?
When they were coming to the line and I saw Harvick up front. Now, I don't want to say this too loud. Get in close. I was rooting for Harvick to win the race.
No shit.
Found myself rooting for him.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You did say it. You said you were going to squash it.
I laid the sword down, man.
Yeah.
I was looking for a breaking music bed. I don't have one. That's insane. Breaking news. That's insane. Because you know what? A couple months ago on the podcast, you said you're burying the hatchet and you're going to be rooting for him. And honestly, I didn't believe you. I didn't believe that you had it in you to actually do it. But yeah, man.
I'll tell you what. Awesome paint scheme on his car too for Talladega. Awesome paint scheme. And you know what? It was probably good that he didn't win, because Shredder, if you're listening, dude, you just saved yourself some money on another diecast. So,
That would have been a die cast worth getting.
Here's the thing. You think they disqualify him for fucking window bolts if he wins his last possible race there?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too.
And it's
the
biggest storyline right now. Everyone's pissed about it. It's all up in arms. Yeah. Oh, just, yeah. NASCAR, they love drama like that. That's, oh my God. They would definitely have done it.
Just rabid hate for NASCAR.
If it might have been another part, Whitey, if it was something maybe like Denny, you put a little sticker here, a little dent in the little panel, let it slide. But I think that you nailed it earlier in the show when it was a safety thing.
Yeah.
I think there's no way you can't when it's a safety issue.
All right, and that's all I have. Let's see. The only race notes I had were like guys' bad days. Do you want to talk about those real quick? Like,
I just had Riley Herbst and Harvick.
Yeah.
You know, EJ had a good day until, you know, the end when all that shit happened.
I mean,
but
I didn't see any cars particularly better than other cars or anything like that. But I mean, Jones had that over the wall penalty, sucked for him. I don't even know how you get an over the wall penalty when it's just a gas stop. I think he said it himself on the radio. I was Googling the rules to see, like, is the gas man already over the wall as they're coming in?
I think he is. I think he's sitting on the wall with his feet.
So, like,
the pit, like,
they like stand up too soon or something. Like, I don't know. That just blew my mind. Sucked for him because he was having a hell of a day too. Denny, of course, got his penalty. He fought for his lap back. Ty Gibbs, gas can catching on fire on pit road. Pretty interesting.
Oh, that whole meme with the choose cone. The choose cone's getting insane out here nowadays.
I didn't see that one. No.
Yeah, someone's like, "Oh, what happened with the choose cone? This is wild." And when all the cars were going around it.
Ricky Stenhouse Jr. running out of gas, collecting Bush, Bell, and Chastain. And then Brad turning host far, causing a big one. We didn't talk about Brad causing the big one. What do you guys think about that?
Talk about LaJoy doing it. We got to talk about Brad doing it too, just to be fair.
Did you guys, so Brad went up, they showed Claire B. Lang after the race, him and Hosovar were talking about it. Mm-hmm. And, Brad, it was just a normal conversation. Brad's like, "Hey, like, blah, blah, blah." You know, there wasn't anything. Oh, I'm yelling. I'm pissed. It's like Hosovar was like, "Hey," he's like, he backed up too much. And then when Harvick went to put, it was an unfortunate situation where,
chain reaction.
Brad should have known that maybe I shouldn't maybe push this guy. He's a little squirrely. He's new to the car. Might not know. It was just kind of I liked it because Brad used it as a learning thing for Hosovar in their conversation about it. And it was unfortunate, obviously. You know, Brad, I was pulling for him to win that race. But I liked the way he handled it afterward in the interviews and talking to Hosovar about it.
It's no surprise either, because Brad just recently, I think on Twitter, said that how highly he thinks of Hosovar, that he wishes he was able to sign him. So, you know, maybe a little mentorship going on there.
And you want to know what? I mean, not to get back to the Crafton and Sanchez deal, but like sometimes as a younger guy, you got to ask for these guys' advice. Like these veterans are the veterans for a reason. You could probably learn
don't
a whole
go out there and turn them into the wall doing 180 miles an hour. Yeah. That's not the way. It's not the way you make friends and you know, learn some information from these vets.
Yeah, you could learn a whole lot from these guys as if you own up to your mistakes and stuff. And I'm not saying Hosovar made a mistake either, you know, but having an actual civil conversation and whatnot, it goes a long way. But other than that, that's all I have to talk about the race, unless you guys have anything else to add.
I think we nailed it.
All right, and we have to talk about who came in last place here on the Bumper Run Podcast. Everyone loves to talk about the winner, one Ryan Blaney, on a Monday or a Tuesday. But we also like to talk about the loser. We did. His name was Kevin Harvick. Though he crossed the line second, he was DQ'd, and he finished behind Ross Chastain, who had his day ended early when Ricky Stenhouse Jr. ran out of gas. He was the lone casualty of that first caution there. He didn't make it through. So technically Ross Chastain came in last, but really Kevin Harvick did, even though he came in second. So, that's the story for both those drivers. And we are on to the next one. We are heading to
Marty. You've got to come back with me.
Where?
The next NASCAR Cup race.
It's the weekend preview.
And we're heading to the Charlotte Roval for the last time, apparently, unless they bring it back after next year. We'll see what happens. If maybe they alternate. Who knows? That could be a fun thing about the schedule in the future. But Xfinity on track Saturday, 3 p.m. on NBC for the Drive for the Cure 250 presented by Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina. And then Cup on track Sunday, 2 p.m. on NBC for the Bank of America Roval 400. And fellas, I need you to... Sunday, I'm not going to be able to watch the race. I'm going to end up watching it on Monday. So can you guys start a separate group chat? Because I'm going to try to stay completely off. That way I don't know who...
Where are you going? Where are you going?
I have to... My sister-in-law is having a thing in Connecticut, like a family gathering, because she...
Can you just text us over the address?
Yeah, we'll show up at the end
Winner. I don't even know.
AJ Allmendinger, and just go back home.
Okay, well, it's a four and a half hour drive. If you're that committed to the bit, by the time the race ends, I'll be driving back to Pennsylvania anyway. So you can have fun at a random restaurant.
We'll meet you at a Love's truck stop about halfway home.
All right, now that sounds like a fucking plan.
Yo, I just want some pizza from Connecticut. I heard, listen, we live in the Wyoming Valley, for all those who don't know, and we're the pizza capital of the world. Our pizza is the best, and I will go, die on that hill. But apparently Connecticut pizza might give us a run for our money.
Okay,
I've never had a reason to go to Connecticut, so
I have to clarify this for everybody who's not in Pennsylvania and not in Northeast Pennsylvania. Old Forge, Pennsylvania is the self-proclaimed pizza capital of the world.
Yeah.
So like we gave us that title ourselves. So I think our pizza is fantastic. I don't know. I'm not bringing basically.
I'm kidding. Wait. Don't stress.
There is a place though. It's like Mystic Pizza or something. They made a fucking movie about it, like a rom-com that's apparently like fantastic. My boss at the radio station's from up there, and he says the pizza down here doesn't hold a candle to it. But everywhere we go, we say their pizza doesn't hold a candle to our pizza. Right. And everyone that moves here says our pizza doesn't hold a candle to where they're fucking from too. So everyone has the best pizza from wherever they're from. Pizza talk on a Tuesday. I like Sabatini's pizza because they chop up the pepperonis.
You gotta chop the pepperoni.
blend it into the sauce. It's absolutely perfect.
I gotta wait, 4 days till Friday for pizza night?
Anyways, Cup on Track Sunday, 2 p.m. on NBC for the Bank of America Roval 400. We are running out of time. Our picks from Talladega. I picked Eric Jones. He got me 11 points. Matt, you picked Bubba Wallace. He got you 14 points. And Eric, you picked Brad Keselowski. He got you 15 points. So not a whole lot of movement in our point standings. I pick first, Matt picks second, and Eric picks last. And I'm going to go with a guy who won the last road course we were on. A guy who's already won a race in the playoffs. I'm going with Slick Willie Two Clocks, William Byron.
Great pick, man. I was going to talk about him because, again, these whole playoffs, he's really stepping up. Another third, like, he's just, his finishes have been incredible this year. Like, yeah. Good pick, Whitey.
I'm going with the guy. I'm not going to overthink this. I'm going to go with the guy who's been unbelievable on road courses with the next gen car, a guy who won a road course race this year, Michael McDowell.
Okay. I like it. A former playoff contender stealing a win. That'd be interesting for the point standings too, as they shuffle all around.
I'm going with somebody. It's not a bit because of everything that went on this week. I swear to God, I'm going with the 48 of Alex Bowman.
All right. I like it. He hasn't done much this season,
he runs really well.
What at the Roval. Job.
He does run really well at the Roval. And you want to know what? Bowman's one of those guys that gets that one win a season at least. So we'll see. Hey, we're running out of races to get him that win.
Wait, who'd you take? I'm writing this all down.
I took Byron.
Yes. Okay.
All right. So we are six races into the, fucking ripped apart by Bowman fans. Oh my God. I have post-traumatic stress syndrome from Friday on Twitter getting ripped apart. Friday night, I was sleeping. I woke up to the sounds of bombs exploding because it was my Twitter notifications. I was just shell-shocked.
Bowman was up front, too, for a little bit at day. He was. Oh, my God.
Somebody accused us of doing crap.
Being a hater and just hating Bowman, which is, it couldn't be further from the truth. Dude,
I just picked him to win.
He was so
Bowman.
He was so close to winning Dega too. Like those final laps, I'm like, if Alex Bowman wins this fucking race, I'm not gonna hear the end of it from all these fucking. They're gonna come back. They're just
crack. Got accused of doing crack. I don't even know what crack looks like.
I don't know what it looks like either. We're six races into the 2023 playoffs. Here's your playoff picture. Kyle Busch out in the woods, minus 26 points in 12th. Bubba Wallace, minus 9. Ross Chastain, minus 9. Tyler Reddick, minus 2. On your cutoff, Brad Keselowski, plus 2 in 8th. Kyle Larson plus 15, Martin Truex Jr. plus 17, Chris Buescher plus 19. Truex is really getting saved by all these playoff points he built up because he wasn't existing.
Hasn't finished better than 15th at all in the playoffs.
No, Chris Buescher in fifth with 19 points. Christopher Bell in fourth with 22 points. Denny Hamlin in third with 50 points. Ryan Blaney in second locked in with a win. William Byron locked in with a win. Will William Byron get his second win of this round of the playoffs? Will Alex Bowman get his first win of the season? Or will Michael McDowell be the outside man who got knocked out of the first round but wins in the second? We will find out this Sunday, 2 p.m. on NBC for the Bank of America Roval 400. And we'll break it all down for you right here on the Bumper Run Podcast next Tuesday night for Matt the Statman Riley, for Eric Daytona Ron. I'm Michael D. White saying have a good night.